You are listening to Let's Go JoJo, the weekly JoJo's Bizarre Adventure podcast from Dynamite in the Brain and Secret of the Sailor Madness. So come along and hang with the Let's Go gang. It's Dwayne.
Hey, how are ya?
It's Niall.
Evening.
And it's me, Brian. Tonight's episode, episode 15, The Grateful Dead Part 1, or The Thankful Death Part 1.
Man, every time I fucking see written one way and hear them clearly saying something else, it just lightens my heart.
I'm just like, just gonna go into the thesaurus and see what we can just copy paste and paste this with.
Where we last left our heroes, most of them were rapidly aging inside a tortoise. Mister was outside the tortoise with an ice cube under his hat, but attached to a hook cast by the hitman Pesci's stand Beach Boy.
This will all make sense in just a few moments, folks.
Also, they're on a train. You forgot to mention that.
Oh, yeah.
They're on a train.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, it's kind of funny, with like a tortoise and a fishing hook and stuff. It's like, oh, it's kind of being beside the seaside. Why are you in a train?
Yeah, no, they already did a boat episode. Nope.
Yes.
That was a different one.
You only get one.
I mean, like, he could have easily had a train inside a train based off the rules of that episode.
Maybe.
This one seems like the more nautical themed one. All right. Yeah.
And the other lad who I've got inside my own head and I cannot remember how to pronounce the word anymore. I think I pronounced it perfectly fine to begin with. And then I got inside my own head.
Fuck. He's not Formaggio. That was a different guy.
No. Prosciutto. And
prosciutto.
A different cheese. All right. Okay.
That's a kind of ham.
Is it?
Yeah.
Yes.
I must be thinking because it's on a cheese board that it was cheese.
Wine and cheese. Why kind of wine, meat, and cheese board? Yeah, I can see.
That's probably what I'm mixing up.
Oh man, yum.
Anyway, he's the one causing everyone to age as he's wandered off down the train with his stand, the Grateful Dead, which causes people to age. But he's
causes people to age unless they're cold. Is the weird rule that makes no sense. Has nothing to do with aging or anything, isn't it?
Yeah, it's it's some cod science, but kind of not really often shared science. It's like women have like a lower or higher core by temperature?
I think it's a lower core temperature.
Yes, because that's why they're saying Trish was aging slower than everybody else.
And also she did have a cold drink. Yeah.
Yes, it was her, Bruno, and Mister had having the cold drinks. Anyway, no time for to worry about that. This hook is firmly stuck inside Mister.
And it's working its way up his arm, and he assumes into his brain. That does appear to be what it's going for, so.
Yeah, it'll be fine.
I love him, like, pulling out a gun and shooting the fishing line. And then your man's going like, oh, that must be Mister. That felt like a bullet that tried to shoot my fishing line. Like, he's got it all figured out. Like, he's surprised. Like, your man says he does have to have more confidence in himself because he has the skills.
Mm.
He's telling a lot just by a fishing line.
Yeah, he has a touch, he has a knack for it. Also, he probably knows it's only Mister carries the gun in that group.
Yeah, which is, like, any of them could carry a gun as well as having stand powers, I'm just saying.
Yeah.
If you could, like, zip open the cover they're hiding behind and then shoot them, that would be really useful. Like, but, alright.
Like, I've got gold experience, also I've got, like, a half as good version of your stand, Mister. I can't bounce around nowhere, but I can sort of shoot a guy in the face. Oh, man.
Yeah.
What have we been doing here?
Your man Pesci says Mister's weight as well, and he's, like, surprisingly skinny. I mean, like, I know that to look at him.
Looks good. Like,
Jesus.
Yeah.
But then he fires a couple of bullets off down the train in search of his attacker.
And your man's like, oh, what's he trying to shoot wild, hoping he can get me? But he's trying to shoot the ice out of the glass.
Yes.
It's very surprising when Pesci was scrabbling around and didn't get, like, a bit of him accidentally putting glass.
I thought that was going to happen, like, you know, the JoJo's fucking, like, horribleness to mouths thing.
Yeah. Well,
generally, that's poop, I think, is how that tends to go. Poop and piss, yeah.
Yeah, and so he tries to grab the ice, which he has to let go of his stand, and once he lets go of his stand, apparently it stops working.
I guess his contact is it like has to be in immediate contact of him.
Yeah,
it might take some concentration to maintain that.
Yeah.
And then Mr. manages to catch up with him, and he's going to ask him some questions. If he doesn't answer them, he's going to kill him.
Take two seconds. Yeah.
He does suggest that he might kill him anyway, even if he does answer them. So, not a great job there.
But then he's attacked by an old man we'd seen earlier, who we thought was just an ordinary old man.
Just a weird old man in fancy pants, going on and on about the... What was it, like soft steak or something like that?
Yeah.
He had the whole old man bit that he could do.
I heard a steak, but I can't digest it.
My teeth is falling out kind of thing. Yeah.
Yes, but it's not an old man. Well, it is an old man. It's Prosciutto has used his own stand on himself to disguise himself as an old man.
Yeah, it's a pretty good bit, actually. So he has a lot more viability beyond just killing people. He'd be like an infiltration dude. Yeah. Set up a drug ring inside the old folks' home.
He does also do the thing of... He says his power works better like when he's touching you. Like, so distance is a thing as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hmm. So, yeah, he ages Mr. considerably.
And then shoots him in the head 3 times. R.I.P.
Like,
Mister.
Yes, I'm always back. Worried in JoJo. I was like, because he could be dead. But I feel like that's too easy.
Yeah, like...
I feel like blat is a bit too fucking simple for JoJo death, you know?
Yeah. Well, as well, this is the guy whose stand revolves around bullets. It's probably something has happened to save his life based on that power.
So yeah, then the two hitmen head back to the front of the train
to find out where they were hiding, and to give your man more confidence in himself. No, dude, you're a talented guy. You did send something else in here, something black, I think.
Yeah, he's like rubbing his face. Chastised him for letting go of the Beach Boy earlier.
He's really hot and cold to Mara, yeah.
All the hands really getting into the neck area there.
Every time he touches his head, it makes that horrible creaking noise because of his big fat neck. And it's nasty.
He's like, who's my best baby boy? It's you. You're my best baby boy.
Don't fuck it up.
So brave.
Yeah. And they find some feces. And he's like, well, if this was a rodent... it would have been affected and killed. It would be lying here dead next to its feces. So it must be something which can age quite a long time.
Yeah, some kind of Highlander in here.
Yes.
Go backwards in that. Like humpback whale, crocodile, a shark they found like off the coast of Greenland or somewhere that could be 1,000 years old. You know.
Must be a shark in this cabin. I mean, like, in this fucking show, that wouldn't be the weirdest thing.
Well, so. No, given one of the people's powers, no.
Is a shark, yeah. you got to make a lot of assumptions in this. But, they kind of tear the cabin, the driver's fucking section, apart. And they do find the turtle hiding in the, a cupboard, I suppose.
Hmm.
Yes, yeah. And they go, oh, look, we can see them in there. but there's one missing.
And yeah, he's insisting, he's like, doesn't matter, there's one missing, we just have to get them now. But it's the girl and kill the rest.
But it's Bicharati is missing. At which point, surprise, he's in the roof.
Yeah.
So is he outside the train or inside the train? I'm still not 100%
clear. Those zips were.
Yeah.
Sometimes okay, it seems to be another dimension. Sometimes it just seems to be literally the other side of whatever you've applied the zip to.
Because he could see them from behind the closed zip. So, like, would he have to be in a lighting fixture or something?
It could be
transparent or something. Yeah.
It could be just zipped up in between, like, the various, like, layers of the roof of the train. Also, with more, like, how complicated would it be for the animators to, like, convey what's going on behind them. If not, we'll just use the cool pocket dimension effect instead.
But
the best bit is, sitting on his shoulder, is Sex Pistols number 6, telling him what's going on.
That's them. That's the big boys.
Oh man,
the big boys who came in and bullied me. You go get them now.
Yeah, he's holding. And look, he's got a thing on his face, holding the thing up to him. But if he has a thing on his face, that means. And cut back to Mister, and it's which five. Is the crybaby one? Number five.
The best boy. Like, oh,
he's crying. I mean, like, Mister's still pretty thankful he managed to kick three bullets from really messing him up in the head. And it's a good thing he hit that ice in his head because it also deflected off the ice somehow. Oh my god. A lot of luck there. But yeah, he obviously still has three bleeding holes in his head, so not great.
Oh, yeah, wasn't there a line earlier about, I wonder where those bullets went that bounced off the Beach Boy, so I'm going to guess there's probably two bullets wandering around with two of the Sex Pistols attached that we haven't unaccounted for yet in the story. Mm.
They're always, like, based off the last Mister fight we said, they're always climbing into shit and getting up to mischief, so yeah. I'm kind of hoping for that, yeah.
Mm. I almost forgot entirely that he keeps his bullets not in his pocket, but just under his hat. He just kind of chips them in.
I did forget that until, yeah, he did that. That's why he wears that swimming cap, of course.
Yeah.
And then we get a fight between Bucciarati and Prosciutto and their stands.
Mm. Yeah, he knocks your man out straight away.
Yes.
Slaps him into the window.
Yeah, he doesn't even stab, just kicks him in the head, doesn't he?
Because it's like, oh, now it's 2-on-1. And he's just like, I'm just going to fucking kick you while my stand's kicking this guy's ass.
Yeah, he just pulled this fucking Trinity from the Matrix kind of weird kind of kick style there. It was cool, but it was very, very elegant. Much like himself.
Yeah. Mm. And he's doing pretty good against your man, but then your man points out, hey, what happens when you, like, fight really good and you build up a sweat? That's right, you get warm, fucker, you're getting old. That's how my power works. So even if you're currently beating me, you can't quite beat me, and now I'm going to grab you.
But then Bucciarati is like, yes, I knew that.
I've known from my years of living as a human that you get sweaty when you do exercise.
And as a capo, it's difficult to be a capo because you've got to protect your gang and complete the mission.
But he can do both in one fell swoop by unzipping the train.
Yes. And the cliffhanger is the pair of them apparently falling out a hole in the wall.
Mm. Or are they?
We shall find out next week.
Unless it's like resolved straight away, I assume it's going to take a bit longer considering this is just part one.
Mm. Yeah. No, they're going to tumble out the train and get dashed to pieces and like under the
part two. Done. There you go.
Ooh. Thanks.
Anyway, well, it's a lot because there's a lot of Sex Pistols in it, and they are great characters.
Yeah, like we were saying the last time, initially I was kind of worried because it's just Mister off on his own. I was like, oh, that's not great. And I was like, oh, that's right. He has a whole fucking group of his own. That's fantastic. Mm.
I like seeing Bucci already out as well. There's some pretty slick moves there, like unzipping half his head to dodge up a punch.
That was pretty sweet, yeah. Also gross. Yeah, but really cool.
Mm.
Yeah, because a lot of the fight involved him unzipping Prosciutto, so he was unable to do anything.
Yeah, this is more that rocket punch. Doing it.
I guess you don't need to in the close quarters like that.
Yeah, but do it anyways.
Apparently in the comic he was hidden on the roof of the train.
Oh, I guess that would have been a lot more to animate, like the wind kind of whipping him around, that kind of thing.
Yeah, the one background flying past.
It's a bit cheaper to do the way they did. The first person inside the weird pocket dimension.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah, I'm not sure I've got much else to add apart from, yeah, I'm fully on board with the show. Really liked this fight.
Mm-mm.
It whizzed by considering not really that much happens.
Not much happens, but there's like a lot of little twists and a lot of little characters playing off each other, that kind of thing.
Yeah, it was a very long time for Prosciutto going off of one. So you see, when you do anything, you're burning calories, and you carry a shit of a teeth, and you get a sweat.
Yes. Really smart. It's like, yeah, we know.
But I bet you forgot your fourth class science homework, didn't you, Bucciarati?
I don't know how much more this covers. This covered four chapters, apparently.
Okay.
So I'm guessing it might be a three-part story. But at the same time, they've been doing these things where sometimes they, like, merge a couple of arcs because it looks like there's lots of, like, super short arcs.
Which are
transitional things. So maybe you only get Grateful Dead Part 2 and then the next one will be whatever.
Starting up in the same episode. Yeah.
Well, Pesci isn't up for the count yet.
That's true. Right. I think that's everything covered for JoJo's Bizarre Adventure this week. As I say, next week it is episode 16, The Grateful Dead Part 2. But before we wrap up, we've got so much more stuff to talk about. It's time for the podcast within a podcast. Let's go! And we start with Dororo. Episode 2. We find it here, The Story of Bandai.
Well, Bandai are a very, very large Japanese corporation. They buy a lot of game companies. They make a lot of Gundam models. Can find most of their products available in the stores and sponsoring some of this anime as well.
Yep. They're going to replace all of Dororo's limbs with plastic ones which you can pop off sprues.
Yeah.
No, that's not the story at all. That was just
a
really clever joke we were making. Which I'm sure nobody else has made this week. Dororo is like trying to get to grips with the extent that, God, I've already forgotten his name again.
Hyakkimaru,
that's it, yes. Yeah, he talks a lot in the comic. He's got his voice right from the start.
That touching scene at the end where like they're finding a way to communicate, to a kind of Helen Keller style, I suppose.
So Dororo's trying to get to grips with what is the extent that Hayakimaru can interact with the world and more specifically with Dororo. But then the narrator explains exactly what's going on, is that Hyakkimaru has none of his senses at all. He's only got his face back.
He's only got his guy's sixth sense.
He's got his sixth sense. Danger. Yes. He can sense like the energy of beings, and they come in different colours. And the only reason that he's allowing Dororo to hasn't like left it alone or attacked is because it's got a pure white energy to it, and so therefore is completely benign towards him. Yeah, and they mentioned that there's only one time, though, that one of these beings has followed him around, as happened previously in his past.
Yeah. Then Dororo thinks, this guy's, you know, he's got some stuff, got some skills going on. He doesn't know how to care for himself because he's eating the fish raw and show him that he's cooking for him would be a lot tastier. So maybe I can kind of get this guy on side and get into the monster hunting business. Go town to town, make loads of money killing monsters. There we go. I heard a rumor in finished over next over there that the guy has some job he's taking care of. Let's go down there and do it.
Yeah, and we got an inkling of this job at the start of the episode. When what's this fella's name?
The blind guy with the biwa. I think he's some kind of name that is obviously related to biwa music
or
sound.
So, yes. He'd encountered a being with a bell who looks like, particularly in this design, looks like something out of a DC era Jack Kirby comic.
Oh yeah, it does a bit actually.
The design is based on the comic, but they definitely the changes they've made makes it more Jack Kirby-ish, like the heavy shadowing under the eyes and across the forehead.
That's a lines.
Yes. Biwa Hoshi, loot priest. Yeah, so all his name is simply his job.
Yeah. Well, you know how you got guys, you know, like John Goldsmith and Sarah Carpenter, you know, it could be a lot of, that's the surname, kind of start out, didn't it? So,
As they're heading to the village, we, the viewer, sees this creature sit standing in the woods. And also, Hiyakimaru sees it. And we, the viewer, having learnt what the narrator has explained to us, go, clearly this thing is not a threat, because otherwise he'd have stopped right there and had a go at it.
Yeah. So, you know, he's on the case from the arrival in the town. And they say, oh, you're the guys we asked for. We heard you got a monster that you need to take care of. And saying, yes, we do. But please come right along. And, we'll give you like room and board. And, when you kill the monster, we'll pay ends of me, yada, yada, yada. And so they do in the middle of the night. And then something does walk by. And it is the big guy with the bell saying,
Kanikozo, apparently is the creature's name.
Yeah, constantly repeating the phrase of just saying like, "One, do you want ... Do you want?" Is a fun time to lure him away somewhere. What's going on here? Well, Doro was freaking out. Fucking Yakimaru, the fucking guy is here. Take care of it. But he doesn't stir at all. He just, because obviously you can see that this creature is probably not the one they're looking for.
Yeah, because to him, it could just be, he doesn't even know what Dororo is, so it's just another one of whatever Dororo is. They mean no harm to him, so.
Yes.
He's good.
Mm. Yeah, but luckily, like, oh, okay, well, the password incident, and next day they're called up to the leader of the village. Oh, she's not very well these days, but she's able to see you today, so please go right in and have an audience and talk about this, what's going on here. And, like, honestly, when you go in and you go into the chambers there and the lady's on the bed, she's saying, oh, do come closer, I'm awfully sick. And just look at her phone, obviously, that's Snake Woman all the way through. Look at those eyes. Hasn't got any eyebrows. Has the rest of her form, like, concealed, like, under all those sheets. And it seems unnaturally long. Come on, lads. Well, at least one of you knows what's up here.
I do like that. Yeah, there's no real great suspense in the story. It's like they get in the room, Dororo rips one of his arms off, and he's like ready to attack this woman instantly. For which they get thrown in jail.
Yeah, and the BOR guy is there with them too. It's like, oh, what are you in for? You probably tried to attack the mayor as well. Well, here we are. And I found, obviously, like, though, how did they get out of there again?
I can't remember. I know they basically end up dispatching the woman, and then it's like, but who is the real monster? Is it the demon who comes into your town and eats travelers and you steal their money? Or is it you feeding travelers to this monster who's taken over your town so you can steal the travelers' money?
Yeah,
both, right? It's both.
It's both. Yeah, but they.
Yeah, but the apparition with the bell was trying to lead people to the treasure. Like, do you want this treasure? And then it was the dark secret of this town. So have that in your conscience if you do want to take it.
So it's kind of like they explain that their town had nothing going for them. They had no way of making money, and then this monster turned up, and they thought, oh. It's just got even worse. This demon's here to eat us all. But it turned out the traveller who they fed to the demon to placate her had loads of road money on him.
Mm.
And so then they cottoned on to this well-worn horror story, ghost story scheme of murdering travellers and feeding them to a monster.
Yes. or it's just murdering them and taking their money, you know. Yes. Any kind of way.
It's a two-in-one of traditional stay in your hometown, never leave it type stories. Because everyone there is out to get you for one reason or another. In this case, two. And it ends with the three of them, and now they've not got the money they were after. And then all of a sudden, we go back to Hiyakimaru's dad, who's worried that his allies are plotting against him, like raising an army in secret. He's going to send somebody out to spy, and then we cut to his secret demonic shrine, where another one of the statues breaks apart, and then Yakimaru back it with the rest of the gang suddenly breaks down in pain, and we don't get to see this episode which part of his body is growing back this time.
Yeah. His dick.
It's not One Piece.
I know, that really hurt though, for I imagine if it grew back. It's almost done. This point out there. Ooh. Oh, jeez. Yeah. For me, it would be like an ongoing theme in the series where we have people are driven to do absolutely heinous and evil things out of desperation because like the country seems to be in a pretty bad state, so we've had these guys feeding people to a monster, and then we've obviously had this fucking Yakimaru's dad doing what he did to Yakimaru, so we'll kind of see what more it'll do with that.
Society is the real monster.
Perhaps.
Yeah, we get some hints of Dororo's own troubled past here as well. And also of some more of of Hayakimaru's, because we see the doctor who fitted him with prosthetics wandering around a battlefield.
Yeah.
At one point. As his name is in the next episode's title, I assume we're going to get plenty of the background filled in next week.
Mm-hmm.
Or if you've already watched it, because it aired on Monday and we're recording this Tuesday, you already know. But hey.
No, keep the suspense for yourself.
Yes, yeah, keep it to yourself. Don't tell us yet. We've not watched it. Next on the list, it's Mob Psycho 100, Episode 2. Sorry, Mob Psycho 102, Episode 2. Urban Legends Encountering Rumours. In which they head off to... What's the town? It's one of these names that one gives towns.
Oh yeah. It was Cuticle Town.
That's it.
Or Cuticle City, I think. Yeah.
To go and investigate urban legends. And definitely not to swindle people out of their money.
Yeah. So popular these days, they're all over the internet and stuff, and there are all these rubes out there who believe in them. I mean, valued customers out there who are being beset by them, then it's their duty to go and sort them out and make a little money on the side, but mostly to do the good things.
I feel like Reagan doesn't cover himself well enough here. It's like, well, they're attracted to the people who would believe in them or something. You know, he's just like, yeah, there's probably a couple of suckers. We need money. That's as much as he gives.
Yeah, we also kind of get a glimpse of, like, we just one conversation is like, he's pretty savvy about real life things because he figures out various things which aren't mystical and what the real life causes behind them. But he does not seem to have that much knowledge of the actual spiritual world's business because we learn that he's vastly undercharging for his services.
He's vastly undercharging. He's actually in someone else's territory, and there's a guild, so come on, dude. I could call the cops on you. I assume that guy was being straight up, since he does seem to have some psychic powers.
Yes, I believe so.
Mm. Yeah.
He's missing a whole bunch.
Yeah, and I love that new guy, that guy they introduced this episode.
Shinra.
That's him. Because he's a big fat lad, but then they make loads of big fat lad action sequences for him to be in throughout the episode.
For him to jiggle about in, yeah.
Well, yeah, it's great, because it's... I've been watching some Sammo Hung doing mystical jiggling about stuff today, so...
Nice. Yeah, I mean, like, not psychically jumping through threes, but if you hired Sammo Hung, that's what it would have looked like, yeah.
Yes.
Would have looked fucking sweet.
I was watching something last night and I was like, what's this inspired by Zoo Warriors, The Magic Mountain or whatever it's called? I was like, oh, I ripped that DVD, it's sitting on my hard drive. I could just go and watch it and figure it out. I think it was. I think there's a not enough discussed influence on anime by that film. Particularly in the late 80s, early 90s.
Right.
Hmm.
So yes, they they run into this guy, and what are the things that's bothering this town? It's the, there's a man-faced dog.
Well, a woman comes up to them and says, are you guys psychics? They weren't very willing to sell their wares. And she's haunted by like a 45-year-old guy or something.
It's been haunted by, there's like a bunch of them that are plaguing the town. Well, yeah, she's getting haunted
by... She's specifically getting haunted by that. And he's getting agitated. That ghost is getting agitated because there's the dragger, is it? Reagan says is not real. Yeah. That's the only one that isn't real.
But we should have
I was like, well, of course, that's the most dangerous one, is what I was thinking straight away.
Should have missed the Jin Men again, the dog, the man-faced dog, of course.
He's very popular nowadays, yeah?
There's the red raincoat thing, which is, if you see it on a rainy day and you're not wearing something red, you'll die. And
Dashing Granny, because that only comes up in the end. Yeah.
When you're driving your car, you might, if you're at the window, you might see an old woman like running and keeping pace with you. And if you can't beat her in a race, you're going to die in a car accident.
Yeah, as soon as I saw the picture of the Dashing Granny on the internet, I was like, I know how this episode's ending. And I was so glad that it did.
I mean, like, you know how things are going to go. Like, I knew that the dragger was going to be the most dangerous one because Reagan doesn't believe in it. I was like, well, that's the worst one then, obviously. He has to be the most wrong about it. You know how things are going to go, but it's so fun to watch them fall into place. It's nice.
Yes, let's just have a look. There's a wiki page for that creature.
The granny or?
The dragger, it's the Coochie. I wonder whether it's a different monster in the comic, maybe.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah. There's somebody nasty on the same with this kind of this scary woman who will grab you and then drag you on behind her until you are grinding down to like a piece of meat.
This one is like she drags you into a bog, so I'm guessing that's like a local version.
Into a bog as well, yeah.
The dog, the man-faced dog is just a dog who some kids have drawn a face on with...
They've drawn like a mustache and glasses, basically.
Yes.
Like, his owner is too, like, short-sighted to see that his dog is shit drawn on his
face. Dog's been vandalized.
Yeah, pretty much.
Reagan takes the opportunity to charge this man a dog cleaning service.
I mean, as Mom points out, it's like, maybe he just likes dogs, because he's very attentive to the dog. I'll give him that. He's not half-assing this dog cleaning thing. He went out and bought, like, dog shampoo and shit.
Look, Reagan, you know, he's always out to make a fast buck, but whatever he's doing, he's going to do a thorough job of it. When he had that, like, massage side business, he was getting in there. He does not anything by half-measures at all.
Yeah. He's earning a dishonest buck by putting in the elbow grease, I guess, yeah.
Then Shinra ends up getting involved with the red raincoat, who just turns out to be a flasher. Then Shinra gets accused of being a pervert as well.
Well, because he was creeping out the kids in the playground.
That's true.
Yes. Yeah.
It's like, why are you breathing so heavy? Why are you sweating? It's like, it's a hot day out. I'm fucking...
I'll be chasing after him. Making him out of the red raincoat.
And everyone in the park just going like, what the hell? And one of them pulls their little, electronic whistle thing. One of the little kids. The kids start pelting rocks.
Danger. Yeah. There's all of you little psycho. Who's that prowler over there? Oh, is that me? It's the guy in the coat.
It's the guy clearly not wearing any pants in the red coat. He's going that way. I gotta go.
Yeah, because he's surprised at how strong he is. He explains he was in the sumo club, and then
that little video game fucking thing was great.
Yeah, and then later when he chases after him, he's surprised that he's able to keep up. And he said, "Well, I'm despite my size, I've got relatively good
stamina
because I was also in the table tennis club."
But your man's like, "Yeah, but you're breathing pretty heavy." But he lured him into the woods to hit him with his, like a cattle prod kind of thing he's got.
But previously they'd sent Dimple, after
to keep an eye on him in case he gets into mischief, I guess. Cause they don't think he's a real psychic at this stage.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah, he's not a great psychic, but he does appear to be a psychic.
He has psychic powers. Yes, that's more than most people.
Yeah, a bit. Dimples inside him, though, don't they?
Yeah, yeah. Well, Dimples a ghost, like, yeah.
Yes, but that's his thing. Is he can bring out people's latent abilities to make them stronger. And so, yeah, then they get attacked by the real yokai, who is apparently built up because everybody, this is an urban legend, and it's manifested because everyone was thinking and afraid of her.
Yeah, the idea that she was, Regan was right in that she was a fake one, but the amount of, like, scariness of the legend, like, gave it life, essentially.
Yeah, I really
and
like
also
that.
Internet.
Yeah, we had the whole idea that, like, a legend or thing, and only has power as long as people, like, believe in it.
Yeah.
Apparently it's based on the rumor from 1979 of the mouth tear woman, Kuchisaki woman.
Is that the snake face lady where she has, like, you know, her mouth open up, like cut up the cheeks on both sides?
That's the one.
It's one of those, like, things where, like, you know, do you think I'm pretty? And she'll approach him, and if you say, yes, she'll take out the mask. Oh, I got a freaky mouth, and she'll kill you. And if you say, like, she's not pretty, then, like, she'll, like, attack you and kill you, because she said she wasn't pretty, so she'll kill you then. The trick is supposedly to say, hey, you're looking okay. And then I'll just, like, confuse her, and then just run away.
Yeah, that, like, this one's version is, are you thirsty? Because then she's going to drown you, obviously, if you're thirsty.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Of course, the picture for it is a Shigeru Mizuki version of it as a statue. As I think there is that. It's like, yeah, if there's a statue of it along the Shigeru Road, then it gets a photo taken and stuck on the Wikipedia page for it. So, yeah, just have to see whether it shows up in Kitaro as well.
Let's see.
But, yeah, so they struggle against it, but it turns out Mob is because he's incredibly nonplussed about everything. He was never afraid of it in the first place.
He's so out of the loop with regards to social things that are trendy that it holds no power over him. Thank goodness. Oh, dear.
Never even had a MySpace page.
Is anything else happened this episode? I think this continues into next week, doesn't it?
Well, the other thing that happens is like playing off the thing that would get to Mob and hit him personally, being a old woman who's into fitness.
Oh, that, of course, the ending. Yes.
Oh, yes.
Like, that's a wonderful, like spin, again, on the thing of, like, he doesn't even fucking get how powerful this thing is, therefore he's more powerful. An old lady, who's just an old lady, who's good at running, like, can just destroy him as a person.
It's like, you know, I'm working so hard to get fit.
I run every fucking day, is kind of like his response. It's like, how could this happen?
I do like that Dimple grows legs to run away from it.
Yes.
He has to go faster. Yeah, that's great. Yeah, and obviously it's another fucking great looking episode with some crazy things that you've never seen before.
There's like the possessed Shinra has been hopping off of trees. That was cool. But doing it in like a clumsy but effective way was nice.
Yeah, I feel like I want to like watch that in slow-mo. That it looks so good.
the bit with Regan explaining when he heard of the dragger as a kid. That's quite good.
It's
black and white, but for him...
And
explain that I didn't believe in Santa Claus, but I believed in a woman who would drag me into a swamp.
Well, it was the idea that, like, when he looked down an alley on a rainy day as a little kid with an imagination, it's like, that makes you creeped out, man. And that's enough fear for it to feed off, yeah.
It's a film called It, and it really got to my head as well.
That's a good point, yes, because I think he is those colours of that kid.
Yeah, he's wearing the yellow raincoat, which is a common thing, but it is very evocative of that scene, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I think that's everything for Mob Psycho 102. Next up was Rinshi Okoda-chan Episode 2. This one has an episode title. It's called In Between Morning and Night. And it is very much different to last week's.
And very much.
Very much. And I was so good, I was like, oh yeah, this is an excellent idea for a series. Because it's unlike the last one where it was all sketches. It's pretty much just one scene.
And totally completely different at all from the kind of meta kind of petty comedy of the last one. It's just like a very kind of prolonged little kind of discussion you're kind of having with yourself in your own head and kind of lying to yourself because it's easier to do that rather than try and confront the harsh truth of things. A little meditation on that.
Yeah. Basically, her boyfriend won't leave his other woman, doesn't appear to be his wife, just appears to be another woman who he was with before.
Yeah.
Okoda. But her feeling is that she's already put so much time and effort into this relationship, she can't just leave him herself. He's got to leave her. She's not going anywhere. That's pretty much the entire scene. It's just her pondering that and the conversation, the half the conversation you hear him having.
Yeah, it's just like, pardon me. Oh, my voice. It's just like she's, the kind of economy that she feels that she has like the agency, the kind of motivation here, but she's still kind of, when she's sort of, trying to go down to bed or to go down to sleep herself, she's kind of wondering, oh, I don't want to, be up close to him because that's too desperate. And if I don't want to like sleep pressing away from him, that means it makes me look like, I'm sulking at you. So she's still like going through these hoops for the sake of this guy, even though she knows that he's not worth her time, you know?
Well, no, I think the opposite. I think he is worth her time, and that's why she's not going to waste the time she's already put into this.
It could be like a cost sunk fallacy kind of thing.
Yeah, I think that's.
Yeah,
she mightn't even be into him that much, but it's like, what, I've already fucking went this much. The gambler fallacy, I think it is as well. Yeah.
Both of them are.
And it looks great. There's only one nod to fantasy, which is when she's the metaphor of like waiting for a train to come, and we see her standing in the middle of the desert by a train track, naked. Otherwise, yeah, it's just confined to her bedroom. She's plucking her eyebrows and lining up each hair on a piece of
paper. Like very meticulously. I suppose I can also kind of, as well, just acknowledge that all the effort and energy she's put into this, and just kind of laying it all down the same way she'll do it. You know, when you see it all there before you, it looks like it adds up to a lot, and it's not something you just want to just toss out, you know.
Yeah, and I've only watched half the interview this time. I didn't get time to watch it all. But it's interesting again, because it's like he was the director this time around.
Isabel Suzuki, and Romy Park was the actor.
Yeah, but he said he didn't know how to approach it, so he got in touch with Mari Okada and got her to write it.
Yeah.
And she'd written a script that it was like, okay, yeah, I've sorted.
Yeah. And the guy feels... He kind of feels, because he was wondering, because he's Brazilian phones, and I don't really do this kind of thing. Like, what did you get me for?
thankfully, the next episode, the director has a different answer to that question. Probably the most honest answer to the question. and next week, she's a rabbit. Or a cat.
Cool.
She's like a rabbit, yeah. The other characters are cats.
Yeah, like I did kind of
scroll a little quickly through the interview team, but it was interesting because you could kind of get a read on some of these directors outside of what they're just doing for this program as well. Yes. Like his kind of his mindset about recording things, because he's not one of those guys who wants to kind of keep it really kind of close to like any kind of rigid idea for the story, but he kind of just lets him kind of go with it and run wild for that type of thing, even though it puts him off schedule and off and out of whack a lot, but he doesn't want to interfere with it. Kind of little things like that, illuminating.
Yeah, that seems to be more of a common thing with the lack of interference in the voice direction gets brought up in the next episode as well.
The
next episode is again it's different. We can talk about it next week. But she's a rabbit. The reason why she's a rabbit is fantastic. That's definitely worth watching. You got to watch the interview just for the reason why they're animals.
Okay.
It makes perfect sense in a weird, weird warped logic. Next on the list is Karakuri Circus, episode 14, By the Sea in the Dead of Night. The first half of the episode is the start of the final battle with the Midnight Circus. The second half of the episode is, that's already happened, we're not going to show you the rest of the fight.
What?
We've no time.
Meanwhile, on your storyline.
Oh no, not even that. No.
No, skip ahead. In the other storyline.
Pole vault.
What? It just...
Like, the guys in the other storyline are reacting to some shit, I think, that we didn't see.
Or no, didn't see watching it. Vasari running away all those episodes ago. And...
Like, but it's been a long time, right?
Yeah,
it's like some kind of Butch and Sundance thing where they just kind of, they all roll up against the fucking, the metaverse and just freeze frames, goes into kind of the pastel postcard memories thing, and then we're on the other side. Or,
no,
how's it go?
It's just, there's an advertising break, and then all of a sudden, so the key part of the first story is that everybody dies apart from Masaru, who's fully rebuilt.
Well, he has like three more fucking puppet limbs now.
Yes. And his hair's almost completely silver at this point.
Yeah, except for like the front, which is like this little black explosion on the front of his head. It's a good
look. You mean Narumi, not Masaru.
Sorry, Narumi, yep. Yeah.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, yeah,
sorry, just talking about this. Yeah, yes. Mingxia,
that's it.
No, there's two other people who should be alive as well.
There's the old guy who later explains as like, I was watching on video.
Oh, yes. He
wasn't there, so yeah, he doesn't count.
But yeah, maybe this is a case where they didn't show it, so you don't know that they're still alive as well.
I was kind of annoyed about the whole thing. It's like, come on, guy, can you come and save fucking Fatima before she dies? And it's like, I will, but then she dies anyway. And I was like, fucking what? That's bullshit.
Your boy from the puppet village is still alive. He didn't get killed.
He didn't fucking do anything. He stood in the way of the stairs having a fag, and the puppets were like, hey, human, get the fuck out of the way. And he's like, okay. And that's it. That's the only thing he does in the whole fucking episode. It's a good thing they brought him.
And your guy turns into a bull. He doesn't get killed either.
Oh, yeah, he just gets fucked up.
I don't think do we see what happens to the drill girl?
Was she killed in the last episode? We just forgot.
Maybe that was.
I think she was. I recall you mentioned the drill lady. She was the last of like the puppet cyborg ones.
Yes.
Yeah, I feel like the woman puppet with the superheated hands like killed her. I could be wrong about that.
You could be right, yes.
Wait a minute, it might have been the other guy who shoots flames. I might be conflating the two powers. Like, I feel like she was on fire at some point anyway. Yeah.
Yeah, basically, while they're rebuilding, Narumi, Mingxia, and, Rockenfeld, who's falling apart at the seams.
Yeah, he's like crystallizing as he's trying to put in the stitches kind of thing.
Meanwhile, Pantalone and, the other one.
The other puppet are trying to convince themselves that's not the real puppet. It's a fake puppet of the real puppet.
Yes. Which they do, and then they wipe everybody else out, and then Narumi comes out and kicks the shit out of them.
Hmm. Without much fanfare, he kind of kicks their ass, like, really quick.
And then Francine explains, well done, but I'm not the real Francine.
I was made by the real Francine in the 1900s! It's like, what?
Yes.
Well, So Francine... Francine Classic didn't burn down in the Baron, somehow survived and became immortal.
No.
What?
Puppet Francine met a different puppet Francine to be her for all the other puppets, but the puppet Francine number two is what I'm gonna call her, said, hey, but won't they know I'm fake? And it's like, it's fucking fine. Don't worry about it.
Yeah. That won't happen. So they won't get that far. Let's not plan for it. Right?
Yeah, they're puppets. They're remarkably stupid.
Yeah, basically the doll Francine isn't as nasty as she was when she was first created. But she feels sorry.
She seems to have learned some shit.
Yeah, she feels sorry for the puppets that she gave sentience to. And so rather than kill them while they're releasing all this disease across the world to try and make her laugh, rather than kill them and deactivate
She's going to keep up the farce that she wants everyone to die. But she doesn't really want everyone to die. I'm just going to go off on a spiritual journey of finding myself. You be fake me for the rest of them while they're trying to wipe out humanity. Okay, says the new puppet Francine.
Yes.
What?
To be fair, Narumi's response is pretty much, what the fuck?
What does that even mean?
Yeah.
And so he chops her head off.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Guy and Eleanor are having a heart-to-heart by the coast.
She's having a bit of a cry because, you know, she's sad that she can't help out Narumi? Masaru. I'm mixing up the fucking names now.
Yeah, because she wants to protect him, but he's wandered off.
Yeah.
Without them. Then Narumi shows up and says, I've come to kill you, real Francine.
Da, da, da.
And she's like, hey, Narumi, fucking, you're that guy. And he's like, I don't know you. And, you know, continues to threaten her. He's like, okay, tell me the cure for Zanafa. And she's like, I don't fucking know the cure for Zanafa. It's like, you're the puppet. It's like, no, I'm a shirigane. You remember from before, like, You know me. And her thing is constantly like, remember, you're the guy who taught me how to smile and shit. And he's like, nope, don't know you. So it's all the tragedy of that. Playing up. But she's, like, she says she's okay with him killing her.
Yeah.
Because of who he is to her, I guess.
Yeah. And we learned that Narumi has learned this information from a shirigane called Fu. I pity the
Fu. Who has, like, all the other shirigane have, like, video cameras implanted in them. So he's been watching every scene that's played out from multiple angles. And he shows the video screen. So it's, like, from the episodes. And he's like, see, I saw everything you did. I got too old to do anything, so I said I'd just record everything. Like a creep.
Yes. I think he's much more of a creepy than comic, but maybe we'll get to see how much of a creep he is. He's the guy dressed as a clown, I think right in the very start of the very first episode introducing the show.
Mm.
So I think that idea maybe is like everything you've been seeing has been his recordings.
Right.
It's his fault so much of it's missing.
It's his poor editing that's the problem.
Some of the tapes got damp and corrupted the insides. Oh no.
At one point he tells you, Narumi, don't you understand? The audience is God. Yeah, damn right we are. Right. He explains that Francine is at a small circus in Japan and she goes by the name Shirigane Shiga.
Why doesn't he question? It's like, wait a minute, if you knew this, why did you let everyone go to Egypt and be slaughtered? Sounds like we would have had a much easier time fucking invading Japan.
Well, yeah. I mean, he's all stuff is in stuff in the comic that isn't translated, so I'm relying on the cartoon to tell me just how much of a dick he is. But from the pictures, he seems a pretty big dick. And obviously, he's either got bad information or he is a dick in sending him off to
kill an innocent, essentially.
But he doesn't.
Like, he claims that Puppet Francine was dissolved and made into her, because she is human, but the Puppet Francine is dissolved into her or something? Is that what he's saying? I think that's something, like, he suggests, or it's one of the mad things I might have fucking gleaned from his ramblings.
That might be right. I believe we'll get all this information once we finally fucking catch back up to Masaryk.
Fucking hell, man.
All this has happened in the comic in between this scene and that fight.
Right.
So coming into this scene, we already know the truth in the comic. Now, the good thing is this has completely eliminated a character who I don't know his deal in the comic, but he seems entirely unnecessary.
Because there's so little information regards to him interacting with the plot? Or...
Yeah, basically they've got a guy at the circus who looks like Narumi. And it's like and seems to be in a relationship with Eleanor at this point.
That's weird.
And so they're having the conversation, not Guy.
Okay, because that would have been weird if he showed up all of a sudden here.
Yes. So I think they've just decided that was a weird bit of fake relationship suspense. That you probably don't need if you're cutting this amount of material to squeeze it into 36 episodes.
Yeah.
This thing doesn't have next issue episode previews, unfortunately, does it? So
No.
I don't know whether we're going to finally get the Mastery stuff. Apart from the weird ending to the Midnight Circus stuff of, like, not resolving exactly what happened...
Like, I mean, like, maybe if they're trying to make you feel like Narumi there and go like, wait a minute, so I didn't fucking beat the big bad guy? It's like, nope, I'm not the big bad guy. It's like, maybe it's trying to make you feel unfulfilled, but like your man said, the audience is God. That's kind of a shitty thing to fucking do.
I'm assuming that we'll never go back to it because this is a show which is constant in forward momentum, ignoring things that fall off the train as it's heading towards its final destination. In the comic, what happens is basically they activate orbital space lasers and blow the entire area up.
I want to see that! That sounds great!
Also, there's a giant fucking... So the puppets think, we're gonna get away with it. And there's another puppet who we've not seen, which is a train puppet. And they all try and get on the train, and so therefore it's up to... a guy from the village and surviving Shirogane to beat them all up to prevent them escaping the laser beams, and then.
So I lost out on seeing a fucking orbital death laser and a train that is a puppet. This is bullshit. Fucking bullshit.
Now the way they've done it, entirely possible they may shove that on an OVA somewhere.
It's the sweet orbital laser train puppet bit that you wanted.
Yeah.
Would have been nice to be in the show I was watching, but all right.
There's no reason why they couldn't stick that in at a later date, unlike other stuff.
Which wouldn't make sense out of context.
Yeah. Apart from being the whiplash of the missing material and then the second whiplash of the massive leap forward in the story, I was actually fine with the actual content of this episode. In terms of moving things forward. I just want to get that Mastery stuff, because it gets all the way back to the stuff from the first three episodes.
So back to kind of the core bit that got us into this, and the bit that we liked.
Full of the stuff which has worked.
Right, okay. And sounds good.
The fact they eliminated an entire character and a massive bit of the Midnight Circus thing, and it relates to stuff where they've dedicated plenty of time to things before, makes me think that this should be, has a, well, not should be, but it has a better chance of being a good storytelling than other bits have been.
Okay, it's like after all that fuckery, it's really going to have to make that landing. Because lord,
I mean, they may ruin it again by giving somebody a voice actor as their voice actor. In which case, the reveal may have already been made anyway. But
right,
if they give yet another character that voice actor, it may throw things off.
Hmm.
But there'll be even more characters for Megumi Hayashibara to voice act, because there's yet more people who look like Francine showing up.
No.
What the fuck?
As we delve into more flashbacks.
Oh, God.
Well, Angelina hasn't a chance to speak properly yet, so I presume she's voicing her as well.
It should be one tank and agent for this one.
Yeah, exactly. The guy who plays Narumi should be the one who's complaining, because he didn't get to voice the character who looks exactly like him and is probably his ancestor, rather.
Yeah.
Yeah. The fucking Toshio Furukawa is raking in it as well. What the hell is this?
Yes. Oh, yeah, you don't see the last of him. That's for sure. Next up is Bono Bono. Oh, did I forget to watch this? That is the question.
I don't know.
I forgot to watch it. Somebody else may have to do a synopsis. It is episode 42, I Had a Fight with Chipmunk.
Yeah, I bet you did.
Watched it. I forgot to watch it.
You basically had a fight with her, because she's going to be mad at you because you didn't watch the episode. He was in. She's going to be so mad at you. You're going to have a fight with him. And it's going to be so sad. Because Chipmunk is, he's not in good form. He's fucking angry. He's fucking, he's rotten sister. We're gonna get all these wallets for her. She says, I don't want wallets. Get the fuck out of here. Oh, I hate her so much. Then Raccoon, I'm talking about the meaning of life and fucking existence is a lie and so on and so forth. And he just farts my fucking face.
They're such fucking kids, man. Fuck kids. Says Chipmunk. And Bonobo points out, well, you're a kid. And Chipmunk's like, well, fuck him anyway.
Shut up.
And it's like, but Chipmunk, I'm a kid as well. It's like, well, then I guess I hate you, Bono Bono.
I'm struggling a lot. I gasped up at my convictions. Yeah, I hate you too, Bono Bono.
I can't get it out the first time. Because it's like, how can you hate Bono? He's a sweet kid.
Yeah. And he goes home to dad and he's crying. And he's like, oh, what happened, Bono? I'm forever Chipmunk. Well, just to take it out on me, if it makes you feel better, I can take it. I'm a big boy.
Yeah, just while I get you over this fight with Chipmunk, is have a fight with your good old dad here. And that'll make you feel better? Like, I think his methods are mostly distraction at this stage, but yeah.
Yeah. So
Bono goes asking advice around the woods, see if anyone has any good thing. Boss Bear's advice is just like, no, dude, that's what got you in so much trouble.
Fight it out, like men.
You punch him as hard as you can. And it's like, Bono's like, I don't think I can do that. It's like, just fucking punch him. It'll be grand. Go on, whack. And that's it. That's how I solve my fucking problems. Explains a lot.
Yeah. I think one of the mistakes of going to Raccoon, it was, before I to get back at him, this is how you do it. And it's just put his hole full of shit. It's like full of leaves and full of nuts and things. Like,
Well, initially it was like bring him a gift of walnuts, but he wasn't even home, so I was like, fuck that guy. And it's like, yeah, his house full of walnuts. So it becomes more of a punishment than a I'm sorry gift.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then this kind of thing, they stumble into each other, like walking on the same forest path, and it's just, it's super awkward, but then no one wants to give in, but then they do want to give in. They both say, I'm sorry at the same time, and it's like, oh, no, I'm still embarrassed. Oh. But they make up, and then they played for the rest of the day.
Happy ending.
And then Chip went back and finds his hole covered in full of shit. Who did this?
That was a nice little coda on the end, yeah.
I see it was Wolverine's dad who gave Chipmunk advice.
So, the wrong person.
I think because Wolverine's dad cares about people.
But he's kind of a fucking lunatic.
He was the one who was going out and checking up on Boss Bear, wasn't he?
That's true, yeah.
He means well, come on. Yeah.
Okay, yeah. I shall probably catch up with that some point in the future.
Yeah, it was just nice. Like, kids don't let things kind of fester on and feel bad about it. It's just best to just, like, meet up with them and talk it out and apologize. Don't just, even if they are being a bit of a shit, you know, maybe it's best to talk to them first.
But it's nice to see, like, both the adults' reactions and the other kids' reactions to that kind of thing, where it's just like, how do all these different characters react with an argument kind of thing? And, like, all of the ineffectual ways that they do it. It's kind of great, yeah.
I can understand getting mad at someone farting in your face, definitely. Well, but that's just Raccoon. He's a dickhead.
Yeah. What did you fucking expect? You're talking to Raccoon.
He's torn out about the point of meeting in life because fart in his face. Like, ah! And he gets up to leave. And it's like, Raccoon, come back, there's more. And farts in his face again. You're right, Chipmunk, there was more.
Oh, God. Like, in Raccoon's defense, and I hate to fucking defend someone farting in the face, but I believe it was kind of presented that Chipmunk was basically standing there talking down to Raccoon. That's how it's framed. I'm like,
I managed to see that bit as you guys were talking. I also like the fact that basically the problem is the typical problem of, particularly for kids, but I know there's adults who do this as well.
Oh, there's fucking plenty.
Is that he's committed to an idea that he hates kids. And therefore, even when it's damaging to himself, he will remain committed to that idea through thick and thin.
Yeah, like your ideals matter more than your own personal fucking mental health, which is just the stupidest fucking thing,
This is my identity.
I mean, like, it's not so bad when you see it in kids. It's like, oh, kids. But yeah, the amount of fucking, like, I think that's the boss bear thing. It was like, fucking punch him. Just sheer violence and manliness is like, his thing is like, dude, that's done you more of a disservice. You missed out on your kid growing up.
Yeah, I think the problem is with adults is they don't realize
they're doing the same thing.
The harm is doing to them as they're doing it, whereas Chipmunk clearly realizes
straight away, like as soon as Bono points out that you're going to have to hate me as well.
Yeah. Whereas even once he says, Chipmunk, you're a kid, and then it's a shock. Well, I hate myself.
Yeah, self-hate is a little easier than hating on Bono. Come on.
And then I should have done this before, but I saw two bees next to each other, and I went for the one I'm most familiar with, Boogie Pop and Others, I should have said, because that did come before Bono Bono.
That did.
Episode 4 versus Imaginator 1. Whoa.
Man,
this is a fucking amazing show.
Whew, yeah. I from what I've gleaned from online reaction, it's like people who are into the books and other book things, they feel a lot more comfortable with this one. They feel it's hit its stride now.
Yeah,
but that's obvious though.
Yeah, it did feel a bit like, oh, this is why they've made the series, because they wanted to make this story. And they had to do the other one to get to this point. Yeah, once again, very little Boogie Pop. Maybe more, though, than previous episodes have contained.
Yes.
As we open with... Oh, I should again. This is a bunch of characters. I need to write these characters' names down again. There's a girl committing suicide, but it's
there's
not,
a girl on the roof, yeah.
But it's not the girl. It's the being inside her, who is apparently akin to Boogie Pop, but hasn't properly separated itself in the body it's in.
It doesn't even have a name yet, technically, yeah.
Yes. Yeah, it kind of just overrides and just takes over anything that's in there. And it's something like it is this kind of apparition of a hypothetical situation or a possibility or all possibilities. So it's kind of what it's saying... It has the power of all the powers that can be. Every power that you can think of, or any possibility you can think of, it embodies that.
Because it hasn't. It's undefined as it is. Yeah.
Now I'm trying to remember the character from the Brotherhood of Dada who's got every single superpower you haven't thought of.
Oh, the quiz.
The quiz.
Yes.
I was also thinking of those things. They were like. It was from Monkey, where there was a bunch of ghosts of people who never existed that if they could kill Tripitaka, then that would prove that they're real. But up to this point, they didn't exist. And I was like, wait, so what the fuck are you then? Okay. And I was like, is that how you beat them? I don't fucking know. It's one of those weird concepts.
Are you sure you're not thinking of that episode of Hey Butt?
Did they do the same thing?
With all I'm pretty sure he's not, Brian, but...
I'm with reasonably certain.
The village of all the discarded character designs.
Yeah, like I was saying, we've seen this kind of idea in other media, but yeah, how it kind of plays it here is interesting. And for the most part, it seems to be trying to be like, catch me if you can a little bit with Boogie Pop, but also trying to influence someone else to become a thing. Yes. Am I reading that right?
Yeah, because we meet the main character in this episode, who is, let me go to...
Asukai.
That's it, yeah. Jin Asukai.
Something like that, yeah. He's like the guidance counselor at a school.
I think art school.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, it's a prep school. I think he might be at arts. Apparently, according to Wikipedia, he was an arts major.
Yes. Now we see him drawing later on. So yeah.
Yeah, and he has this ability to see people's hearts as plants.
Like, as a growing rose? I think it's always a rose for some reason.
Well, yeah. That's what it should look like, and he never sees one. He never sees one which looks like what it should look like.
Yeah, it's always like, oh, this one is only budding, this one's roots aren't big enough, this one's leaves haven't spread out. It's like, there's always something off about the person. They're always missing some essential part or something. Yeah.
So his neighbor... he's talking about going to the same art school that he went to, and he comments the plant in her chest looks very healthy, but it doesn't actually have any flower on it.
And I gotta say, when that was initially presented, you have this kid looking at him, and he's like staring at her chest, and I was like, "What the fuck is this now?" And I was like, "Oh, okay, it's a weird power."
Yeah, that's the girl. That's the one who mentions, though, that she's been visited in her dream. Something was sitting on her chest and told her that it sometimes snows in April.
I thought she was describing, what do they call that, sleep paralysis, is it?
Yes, sleep paralysis.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah. Which, is, this is, because I'm pretty sure this is mentioned in Boogie Pop Phantom. And so that line about it sitting on a chest, I was like, oh, now I understand what's going, this science fiction idea, or an inkling of science fiction idea, is that it's, so there's a Horizon documentary from the 90s where they're looking at alien abductions and the science behind it, and basically saying it's basically sleep paralysis a lot of the time, and it matches up with ancient... Or medieval descriptions of being visited by succubuses and incubuses.
Yeah.
Angels or any number of mythical things. Yeah.
Then in the lab, they reproduce it by stimulating, I think, the frontal lobes with electromagnetic energy.
So your awareness is on, but your body is shut down in sleep mode.
And then they sort of match up how, like, a lot of these occurrences, you can see, like, earthquakes are being happening around the same time. And so,
it's some kind of shaking of the...
So it's like natural changes in electromagnetic radiation.
Yeah.
Affecting the brain. That's fascinating.
That's something as well that, like, for kind of... heightened levels of that are behind a lot of ghost sightings, because it's too much part of your brain. You kind of feel like you're being watched, or someone else in the room with you, but you can't really put your finger on it. So you feel lingering dread and
unease. Like, one of the things I heard for that is like it's either a latent or a evolved past or whatever the hell version of I can't remember the proper word for it, electrosensitivity, like, because some animals still have that. Like, you know, the way a dog will fucking know when there's an earthquake, that kind of shit.
Yeah, it's kind of like that.
We have that, but it's so, like, low fucking grade in us that when it does set off, it freaks our brains out and we can't figure out what the hell is happening. Yeah.
I guess that Boogie Pop's approaching that, but saying, what if that electromagnetic energy was sentient?
Yeah. If it had will, I suppose.
Yes, if it had.
Or if it had an idea it wanted to do. That's
the thing with Imaginator, seems to be that it doesn't. It's searching for a purpose with the power.
What am I? I need to even get a name at this stage. Yeah.
Yeah.
Hmm.
And it mentions that it's taken the name because
it was a poem or something, was it?
something like that. It's like, yeah, I can't remember if it was a poem or it was called it in a book. I can't remember.
Well,
yeah, because it quotes something. I can't remember.
Well, it was like the criminal psychologist writer from the first arc.
Yeah, of course.
Heard that the
relative
Kieran Nagy's father wrote the both those books.
Right.
Yeah, and then he runs into one of his former students who attacks him. But then I can't remember what order. I think his Imaginator's talked to him before that.
Yeah, well, Imaginator possessed the neighbor who came in.
That's it. Yes,
and then kind of introduced itself in a sense. Well, reintroduced itself because he already had seen it out in the streets because he was seeing this girl walking in the air.
Yeah. And trying not to react that much because obviously the crowd couldn't see her.
Hmm. And it possesses again a former student and is trying to, like, it knows that he can see these, the flowers within people and how he has this, maybe, which even isn't quite right. He's trying to, like, encourage it by giving good advice. He's why he's a guidance counselor. But why if he could more like directly do that? And Imaginator is kind of offering him the chance or the ability to do that.
It kind of shows him, like, as the neighbor, it shows him what, I think it says specifically, while he says, like, I'm not going to do that. I don't have to do that. And he's like, yeah, but you could. And it's showing him what he could potentially do in order to try and influence him in that direction.
Yeah. So Imaginator, as the former student who's, you know, she was trying to mug him and pull a knife on him, turns the knife on herself and cuts her own throat. And then, now she fucking rushes in and says, oh my God, everyone cut her throat. What the fuck's going on here? And she's conscious of this, and she dies in his arms, and he's brought down to the police station. And
I love the way that's framed initially, like, so that it looks like he's the suspect, but then as it kind of goes on and he's telling his story, he's like, oh no, they totally believe him. They just want to take his statement. Because there was another witness there saying, he's like, yeah, and then some woman came up to him and slashed her throat.
Yes. And so they let him off then, and the kind of cops are saying, the good thing, like, you were there when she passed, because it seemed like she had kind of died with a kind of feeling of contentment and that. Mm. Like someone had pricked all the thorns out of her soul, and he just walks out then, little smirk.
Yeah, fucking wrong choice of words, man.
Yeah.
Or exactly the right choice of words for the occasion, I guess, for him.
Mm. And then he intervenes in a little scuffle between, they look like primary school kids, but he kind of challenges them with her hassling like a boy and a girl, and he intervenes then, a boy and a girl run away, and then one of these kids pulls a fucking knife on him.
I believe they're middle school children because they're not just random children we're seeing. Because I think they're like the first couple of characters who are on the webpage for this story arc.
Okay.
Right, man.
And again, kind of thinking, he's able to fucking, I guess, touch that kind of flower inside them again, because he freezes the kids in place. I guess with some kind of, they're content now. I'm showing them where they need to be to kind of the flower and some sort of blossom or something like that. Anyways, you can just go around freezing people in place. He's fucking, this kid's freaking out at him. And you know what he's going to fucking do to him. He's going to fucking kill him and then feel that one sweet, sweet high again, like I did with his former student.
Yeah.
I don't know. But we have some kind of semi-serial killer on the loose anyway. Which I thought it was interesting then that, like, Imaginator was the name of this being, and then he's kind of going to adopt that persona himself, and his book got this name from this book about criminal psychology. And now we have a mentally unstable guy who was just escalating his fucking actions here, and who knows where it's going to lead.
And then we end with another girl about to throw herself off a roof, who turns out to be the friend of Tsuko, the girl who was Imaginator.
Yeah.
I feel like we're going to have to go like Imaginator 1 and Imaginator 2 or something.
And then Boogie Pop shows up and explains that if you do kill yourself, you can't follow your friend because they're not your friend, and also they're not dead.
Yeah, as the Imaginator in Your One's Body said, can you stop me before I hit the ground kind of thing.
Yeah.
Some kind of way like that. So her friend is still alive? Or savable, maybe.
I don't know, because we've not seen...
Yeah.
We've not seen, like, the general... Well, I guess not, because that girl thinks that her friend killed herself, so presumably...
But the way Boogie Pop says it is, like, well, she's not dead, thing.
But also that she wasn't your friend. It was something else. With your friend's face at that point. So I think the friend is gone.
Maybe Boogie Pop is referring to Imaginator as being her friend, for lack of a better term. Yeah.
That's pretty much the episode. It's a great start.
Like, and just kind of the twists and the mysteries again. He's good at this shit. He's been going nuts to me.
Yeah, and the screenwriter as well.
Screenwriter, yes, and I guess the original,
book as well, yes.
All of them are very good.
Yeah, maybe the screenwriter may be better at adapting stuff than writing his own stuff. but maybe Double Decker would have been better with a different director.
Perhaps. Oh yeah, I see. perhaps.
And then the 18 episodes of this, because apparently further down the line there'll be 2 hours of it to watch 1 week.
Oh yes, that.
Oh dear.
So I would guess 4, 5, and 6 are going to be versus Imaginator 1, and 7, 8, and 9 will be versus Imaginator 2, and then we'll get that 2 hour slot of 4 episodes together, and then we'll get some more after that. Well, yeah, I say that only takes that 2 hour block only takes you to episode 13. There's another 5 episodes after that.
And
it's a weird schedule, but hey, if it works. But when I read I was like, I'm glad we're not watching too much stuff this season.
Yeah, I have a quite manageable thing in mind to get to, and it's going to. This is coming down a train at us now at some point in the future. I guess if I can get more of this, that's so bad, because I am liking it, and just with the way that they're set up and breaking it down into multiple chunks like this, then there's no like massive danger of a story running over longer than it should. It's just going to be like another self-contained thing across this episode, so like, yeah, I could go for another story of that, sure, because I'm liking these so far.
It does feel a bit monkey paw, though. It's like, you like this? Do you like 2 hours of this?
Yeah.
I'm all in the boogie pop of the world.
Yeah, there's a good chance that that's when, that'll be the week Conan returns to.
Yeah, when more shit starts happening. There'll probably be another fucking show starting up then as well.
Yeah. What's interesting to watch this, actually back to back was, Mobsucker 100, that episode of it, because seeing the different sort of portrayals of encounters with urban legends.
Yes.
And kind of psychic ideas, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, because it's interesting that he's got a weird power not related to these entities or that mysterious corporation. Or from outer space. So yeah, he just has a power that apparently he's had from birth, and no further explanation needed, my lord. Anyway, next up, and finally, Gigage no Kitaro, episode 40. Is that episode 40?
It is.
The final ballad, Sarah Kozo. Yes, I was correct. I have read the comic version of this. This new anime version is much better.
Like, was the comic one done as a kind of morality play as well, or was it just...
No, it was not. No.
It was just talking about comedians and shit.
No, it wasn't even talking about comedians. It was like, they were a, like a British invasion style inspired pop band who had stolen Sarah Kozo's song. And it just ends up in like a big old brawl. Sarah Kozo and the band being rescued from the cages they've been thrown in. Whereas this has such a great ending. It's like, you know, the guy's doomed. It's so well paced.
It's this lonely with these pregnant pauses where you think, oh, he's going to definitely go say that. He's definitely going to say that. Then he says the other thing. I keep swerving it like that all the way through. And I wasn't sure towards the end what was going to happen, even though I had a bad feeling that it was going to go one way. And then it,
Yeah, because I think I've seen people talking about it, and I think they're like, I think they people talking about it are overly cruel to the character, because I think they're not people who've been on stage. It's like you say all...
Like, I think the show does a good job of getting across how fucking desperate he is at this stage.
Yes, and you talk about all... when he's off the stage, everything makes logical sense as to not say the word. But once he's on stage with the spotlight on him...
With nothing else. You've got nothing else in your pocket to work with.
Then it's worth death to get that laugh.
Like, I'm not saying that's like, oh, I understand him. We'll totally do that. It's just like, it's kind of pitiable. It's like, you probably should have just not went on, dude. You probably should have given up, that kind of thing. Like his wife and kid were suggesting, that kind of thing. But, but even they were trying to stay beside him and support him, even though it's like, I don't think he cares about you guys as much as being famous.
Yeah.
Like, even with this, like, you're not even like, okay, it won't be a one-hit wonder, but you'll just be like a two-hit wonder, because this is the only other bit you've got. It's kind of pathetic, but he's hooked on that. He's got to have that back again. He's beating hasn't happened for so long. He's got to have it. I don't care if it's for a stupid fucking phrase. It's kind of almost a little fucking shade of it at Picutaro, who was gotten by on a very, guy on the one bit for every talk show goes around. But I would say we've seen a bit more depth to his comedy this very podcast. So,
So the key to this episode is that the comedian, Poverty Osamu.
I think they translated it as Poor Osamu because that's a little better.
Overhears a song being sung by the Kappa, Sarah Kozo, while he's cleaning his plates in the river.
And he's like, that's fucking catchy. That's the new thing.
Of course there's a yokai for cleaning plates in the river.
Who else is going to do it? Well, I mean, like, people he captures, obviously. But,
Yes. What's it? I'm sure if I just slide anywhere across this episode, it'll come up. Petaco, something like that.
Like, it's like the same sounding thing three times with a variation on it.
Yes.
Yeah.
And he's got a silly dance for it as well.
I don't sing it out loud yourself, and it was... You come back. Of course, all your viewers at home, don't play the podcast out loud, like in the front room. You might come and hear it and come and get you.
And so he's returning, the Kappa's returning, walking past a park when he hears a kid singing it, and basically goes up to the kid and goes, "What are you singing my song for?"
He's actually, like, for a crazed lunatic who really freaks out if you're singing his song, he's quite reasonable. The kid goes like, "I just was copying what I saw on the TV." And, like, he drops his phone. The Kappa stops chasing him. He's like, "Oh, it's this motherfucker. Okay, I'll go after him." And when he goes after him, he's like, "Hey, stop singing my song. You might go, I promise I won't sing it again. You promise? Okay, then I won't murder you. We're good. We cool." Like, he does go like, "Okay, then I won't kill you then." And even the person who was committing the crime, inverted commas, he's willing to let go.
Yeah.
On a promise.
They see it on social media, and Kitara goes, "Well, I better go and warn him." Sarah Kozo really likes that song, and he really takes badly when he hears other people singing it.
He's very,
and he is kind of a lunatic.
He's very, very, just very big on copyright law. Yes. Don't challenge him. He knows what he's talking about.
Yeah.
Original song, Do Not Steal. so he goes and warns him, and,
but I do then, like that scene as well, the creepy him getting closer as the traffic kind of going by.
Yeah. And it seems to work, but then Ratman sticks his nose in and says, don't worry about it. I know that monster. I'll have a word with him. We can sort out a deal. You just carry on using that catchphrase.
For this much money, I'll talk to him.
Yes.
Ratman does that and gets his fucking ass kicked. Because, Sarakozo is not going to hear it. It's no, fuck it. If he's going to do it, then he's going to fucking pay for it. So and he goes back to him. He's fucking bloody nose, black eye, but saying, so I thought to the guy, you may want to lay low for a while.
yeah, he ends up catching both of them, forcing them to clean his plates for him. And they clean 10,000 plates. And they're like, oh, we can go now. And they're, no, get in that cage.
And like, I said clean the plates, but I didn't say I'd let you go. Yes. You should have thought ahead, lads.
Yeah, and while you sink into the marsh, contemplate what you've done to me.
How dare you? dear.
And so Kitaro has to come along and beat up Sarakozo, and they're like, okay, right.
Like he doesn't kill him or anything, or turn him into like a little ghost, because he's like, well, technically, he's been wronged here.
Yes. But you're overreacting, trying to kill him. But at the same time, don't use his song again. You get the message? He's trying to kill you once. I'm not going to save you a second time.
I get this thing later on. Can I just use it then?
No.
I mean, but it's been my lifelong dream. I got a wife and a daughter. And he's just like, no. It's just no kid at all. No, you've already gotten your... Saving you from the monster a bit from me today. Everyone only gets one. So.
Yeah.
What's this gonna be, fella? Just flat out no. Just stares him down. It's really fucking intense.
And so he's gotta think of a new bit, and he can't think of a new bit, and then his daughter, like, pretends that one of his terrible new bits is good, so that he won't rely on the song which will get him killed. Because that's the great thing, is, like, the mum and the daughter, the wife and the daughter also know about the Kappa and that it's going
to kill him. They got onto Kitaro, didn't they?
Yes.
Yeah. They know about it. Like, I think the only people who don't know is like his manager or promoter kind of guy who's like, yeah, that's a good new bit. Just do the new bit. That kind of thing.
Yes. Say the line, Bart.
And he tries to do his new bit and he fails.
It's just like, there's not even like booze or anything. It's just like dead. Yeah. Dead audience, like no one's reacting, everyone's worse. Just staring at him. It's just like, the fuck was this?
And the worst thing is, it's just before he goes on stage, the guy he's been working with at the shitty comedy club where people talk on their phones and laugh at things on their phones, is the comedians, is finally getting his big break with what appears to be an awful act.
It's to do with like a water gun or something?
Yeah, he's wearing a water gun, he's got a shell on his back, he's got antennas.
Well, that was always his bit,
yeah. Yeah. I mean, part of this does seem like a bit of a taking the piss out of what passes for comedy on Japanese variety shows.
Oh god, yeah.
I mean, like, the Nekomatsume is like looking at your man's bit on the phone and going like, the fuck is this? Mana sent this saying it's really fucking funny, but it's dumb as shit, is basically what
these fucking guys.
That's how Kitaro finds out about the song, like, yeah.
Yeah,
jeez,
it's the idea of no matter how weak your material is, if you've got a ridiculous catchphrase to stick at the end of it, you'll get ahead in life.
Yeah, and you could be the most erudite, wittiest motherfucker around with like reams and reams of material, but just want to hear you do the fucking the same joke.
Do the bit.
Come on.
Yeah.
Do the Bartman again.
And so, yes, they're completely silenced, so therefore he's just going to have to bring out the thing which is going to get him killed. And he does it. He's elated. The crowd are cheering. He's going to win.
This is the happiest moment of my life. Like, I've only never came some number two in this contest, and that was 12 years ago when I was at the top of my game. But now I'm going to surpass it. This is going to be my crowning achievement.
And then we see Sarakozo in the wings.
Going to enjoy this for the rest of my life, which won't be for very long.
Yep.
Oh. I was just... I knew what was going to happen, but I was just still bidding the guy, think of your family, for the love of God, just, ugh, please.
Yeah, it felt nearly like Laughing Salesman, where it's like, nope, everyone's fucked.
Oh, man.
Yeah, that's why it was great. Fantastic. The next week, it's all about whatever those things are when objects gain a soul.
Yeah.
I'm really hoping this is their Barry Cando episode. Just, there is, like, yeah, yes, throw your things out, but those things might come back, because...
to come back.
Love them more than you thought, so they've gained
they always life. Come back.
Did they bring you joy?
Yeah. No, did they bring you death? They probably won't go as dark as this one did, though.
Nah, they probably got to lighten it up a little.
A little bit in between. Yeah, but there's still, like, besides the story having, like, a really kind of nice, fun, cutting ending to it, I thought it looked really well. It's very atmospherical all the way through as well.
Yeah,
I mean, it's a different kind of menacing tone than the one with the, what was the guy, the train guy? Yeah. But it's nice to see that kind of episode again.
Yeah, well, this is more a little more on the subtle end. I mean, like, they're literally on the train to hell, so I think it can't get any more car than that already is.
Yeah.
But this is like, you know, had a good one run, fun conveying a kind of creepy, more creepy, unsettling atmosphere. I particularly liked, on the stage lights, especially there at the fucking comedy show. They look a lot like Sarah Coase's eyes when he gets angry, because they glow yellow as well. So he's doing a bit on stage in front of the crowd, but he shouldn't have fucking do it. And just the stage lights look like a million of those pairs of eyes, it's all glaring down on them.
And Ratman had some good body language as well.
Like everyone else is saying, don't fucking do it, man. It's fucking dangerous. Don't fucking do it. But Ratman's just as like, yeah, you know, you're just a piece of shit, like, you know, like me. You're just willing to do anything, like Ratman just calls him the fuck out. It's kind of great.
I'm a rat. At least I know I'm a rat.
A rat when I see another one.
There's also his, like, absolute confidence that this is going to go well with Sarah Coase.
Yeah, that was kind of fun. That was him not knowing what the fuck was going to happen. Yeah.
And him driving his little...
his really, really tiny car. Yeah.
Smart car. It's a big city in Tokyo. You know, it's had to park these things.
Yeah, I wonder whether there's like a more specific reference, because they put a lot of design into that building where the TV film is taking place, so I assume that is a parody of
a specific movie. Comedy circuit kind of thing?
The producer just seems to be a generic type, but I do wonder whether that generic type hasn't his origin in
a particular... In reality?
It's just that type comes up so often that I figure there's, like, some producer type who was, like, a personality as well, and therefore...
Right. It kind of gets written as the stereotype, or... Yeah.
But yeah, excellent episode. As good as it was having a nice long story, I think I prefer when... they're doing these individual tales where they can change the mood more easily from week to week.
Change the tone and everything, yeah.
Righto, I do believe that is everything, and we've got it all done under 2 hours. Fucking hell.
That's been a while, huh?
Righty-ho. That ends this week's episode of Let's Go Jojo. Be back here next week for The Grateful Dead Part 2. And in the meantime, check out our regular podcasts at secretofthesailormadness.com and dynamiteinthebrain.com. Goodbye.
Oi.
Bonsoir.